Chip. I will now turn the meeting over to Mike T. from Wasco, who has agreed to share his experience, strength, and hope.
Howdy, howdy.
Morning.
My name is Michael. I'm an addict.
Michael.
And I'm real nervous, you know, because most of these people I know for a lot of years, you know. And that's why, you know, I'm nervous, is because when people know you, you can't really lie. Or, for me, it would be making something more than it is. You know, putting flowers on it, we call it, or making it sound good. You know, I'll start with a little bit of where I came from. You know, I used for more than 30 years, and there at the end, you know, when I knew I was coming to the end, I don't know about you guys, but I knew I was coming to the end. You know, when you start losing things, you lose your house, you lose your children. Nobody wants, the connection don't want you anymore. You know, you go and say, kick a little or lose it all. He just laughs at you. You know, the connection just wouldn't let me come around anymore. He says, you're too hot. Every time you come, the pigs come. The police come. They're always following you. Stuff like that you know that you're done. You know, the drugs don't seem to work anymore. You're always sick. You can't get enough money to cover it. But in the beginning, it was fun. You know, you get the bag, you start dealing, and you start doing all that stuff that we do, you know. And you always get you a blonde. At least I did. Blonde with big tits. You know, look good. But there at the end, man, it got miserable. You know, everybody wants to either send you to church or to a psychiatrist. You know, and usually the psychiatrist is usually, or a therapist, usually it's the parole officer. I went to prison in 1962 for the first time. I was in San Quentin in the 60s. I was in Soledad in the 60s. I went to Folsom in the 70s and just kind of stayed there in Folsom, like forever. You know, they let me out in 91 for the last time. In between there, I went in and out, you know, like we usually do. I don't know if you've ever been to the Department of Corrections, but they keep you forever. They let you out every now and then so you can get a new one. You know, and if you're a good addict, you bring a new one. Usually a possession. You know, usually they intend to sell. You know, and you're probably just scoring from somebody there at the end. Give me the money and wait here. One of those. You just happen to be a narc. Yeah. But the end was kind of weird for me, you know. Looking back at it and writing about it and doing all this stuff that we do in Narcotics Anonymous helps you to get it together. Let me give you this. Let me clear this up because it's real important to me. Is that I forgot a lot of the stuff that I learned in Narcotics Anonymous. I know the basics to stay clean, but you know, my first sponsor told me that I had to go to a step study, go to a book study. You know, that's what he wanted me to do. So you get a meeting every day for at least 90 days. The reason I'm telling you that is because I did all that. I did everything that was asked of me. You know, he'd tell me stuff like, you got to get humble before you crumble. You know, those sayings that he'd give me, you know. And I didn't understand them. He said, you don't have to understand them. Just do them. You know, if we want to learn how to use, we'll ask you. Stuff like that. When I first came in, you know, it was difficult for me. You know, a lot of meetings that I went to were AA. You know, they didn't have any NA meetings in Orange County at that time. Had maybe like four. And that's where I got clean. I got clean in Orange County. And what happened to me was, my sponsor told me, well, if you want an NA meeting, start one. Keep it real simple. You know what I mean? Then start one. Go over there, get a book, be the secretary, and wait around until somebody shows up like Jimmy Kay did. So that's what I did. You know? And I still do it today. You know, now I start a lot of Spanish speaking. You know, and I live in Wasco, where about 80% are Spanish speaking. And I started a lot of meetings there, but they kind of fold up. You know, a lot of meetings that we start, they go pretty good, you know, and then they fall apart. I do my convention in Bakersfield. They always ask me to go help with Spanish speaking, and I never can draw enough people to speak Spanish. They all say they're going to show up. They all promise they're going to be there. You know, but you know how we Mexicans are. You know, some of us, not all of us. Because Alex is here, and when he tells you he's going to show up, he shows up. He's my sponsor every now and then when I allow him to be. Okay? And that's the truth. See, I don't know about you guys. You get yourself a sponsor, you know what I mean? And you only call him when you're hurting. You know? When something goes wrong. You know? I try and invite him to different situations. We're at the world together, which was fantastic. You know, one thing I get to tell you about the World Convention, the people that don't know, we have World Conventions for Narcotics Anonymous. And this time it was in Orlando, Florida. And we got to see Florida. There was 25,000 addicts registered. Okay? And there was 1,000 newcomers, and they gave 1,000 books out. Just like we gave my friend here a book, they gave 1,000 people that had 30 days or less. That really impressed me. For me. You know, to see. And I was telling my friend Rick there that the worst thing that can happen to a person like me is be with 25,000 addicts and get lost. See? Because there's that many people, you get lost, you know. Because I don't know if you've ever been to a convention, but you got to go where people go. They open the door, you can't go in. Because everybody's coming this way, you know. And you really don't see the people that you want to see. I went looking for people that told me that they were there on the phone. I'm over here and I'm over where? 25,000 people. Try and find somebody in a crowd like that. Anyway, so that's my big thing today, is stuff like that. But let's get to the good part. Okay? I got clean in Orange County, and I'll give you a couple of things that happened to me that I didn't think I was going to stay clean. Okay? Because those are important parts of my life. You know, the first thing that happened to me, I was raising my grandchild. I got him when he was small, right? And my daughter was using. I forgot to tell you, everybody in my family uses. Mom, dad, everything. You know, it wasn't just one of us. We all used. We all dealt. We all did what we had to do to stay loaded. Anyway, my daughter was using, and I figured, well, this is my chance to raise a child. So I told her, well, give them to me. I'll take care of them. I'm clean. I've been clean 4 years or something like that. So I figured I can take the responsibility now that I've been clean. And I raised him, you know, between the whole family, not just me. I like to say it was just me and I raised him, and, you know, it didn't happen like that. You know, my sister would take him. Everybody would at least get him for a little while. But anyway, my idea was that I would raise this kid and he'd never see me get loaded. That was my thing with the guy upstairs. You know something, man? If you let me raise this guy, and if he'll never see me loaded, he might not get loaded. So I raised him for about 4 years. I started working for a DUI program. I was kind of being a counselor. I went to school, went to college, did all that stuff that they asked me to do in the beginning, you know. They told me, you got to go to school, brother. You got to learn something new. You got to go to college. So I did it. And I was working there, and it was called School 10. I remember it just like it was yesterday. And I'm working for School 10, and then I got the phone call that had run over my grandchild, a drunk driver, and he was one of our clients. And it was Easter Sunday, and Monday he was going to put on that apparatus where you have to blow in the car to start it, because it was his third drunk driving. So he passed away, you know, in the accident. Now I can call it an accident. I used to say he killed him. If you're an addict like me, that's what you say. The son of a gun killed my grandson. See? Death hits us real hard. Especially when you're looking forward. You know, it just like stops your whole world. I had a hard time with it in the beginning. I did what we call adjustment center time, or hold time, or, you know, I stayed in my house. I wouldn't come out. I was afraid to come out. I go to a meeting, come back, go to work, come back, and I stay in my house. I figured it was like lockup. You know, I did a couple of years in one, in the shoe. They call it the shoe now. We used to call it the slammer. You know, you're isolated. It's isolation for the people who don't know. They keep you by yourself in a single cell. So I did that. I did that for a couple of years. I couldn't handle people. You know, I had a lot of trouble with it. But I didn't use in between. That's the message that I got, that I didn't use behind it. A lot of things happened to me, man, during that process. The next thing that happened was, this was Easter. Okay. By Thanksgiving, I got another phone call. I got a pair of twins that were out there using. They got shot right in front of my ex-wife's house. And I just happened, they invited me to dinner for Thanksgiving for the first time. My wife said, you can come to dinner now after 5 years. You can come to the house. So I was coming to the house, and I don't know about where you live, but over there they surround the whole block. They block everything off when the shooting happens. So I drove up, and my son was laying on the floor, and another kid was laying there too. You know. So those two things happened to me, you know, where I lost my balance in recovery. I started hating things, you know. The first thing that I hated was the guy upstairs. He said, how could you bring me this far? You know, I've been clean. Don't you know that I've been clean? I used to talk to him. He said, I've been clean, you son of a gun. You know, how could you do this? See, because I didn't know any better. My story is kind of long, you know. Bear with me, you know. A lot of that stuff I've forgotten, and I really don't want to remember it. But to carry a message, you got to tell the truth. See, so before I came up, I went to the bathroom. I was telling my friend, I got to run to the bathroom before I jump up here because, you know, we're getting old, and that's what we do. When we get old, we always run into, at least for me, it looks like I'm always running to the bathroom with my Peter in my hand, you know. Yeah, so I didn't want to have to do that while I'm here, up here trying to carry a message. You know, for the newcomer, you know, just bear with our stories, because our stories are usually pretty long. You're kind of young, so you can still grasp maybe some of this stuff. You know, I had a hard time grasping recovery, you know. I'd get it for a little while, then I'd dump it. I say, man, F those guys. Yeah, guy's full of shit anyway. He probably locked it up, couldn't do any time in prison. You know, we talk all that out of our side of our neck stuff, you know. Yeah, see, you know, guy locked it up anyway. You know, can't make it out here, can't make it, all that crazy stuff that we talk. Anyway, getting back to the recovery part. So these were points in my recovery where I had to do something. So I started going to this retreat, and 3 days in a retreat, and that did it for me. I don't know about you guys, but I had to be away from society in a retreat so I could receive the message, so I could open up again. And I got a lot of you guys know Gordon. I got him as a sponsor. You know, and he kind of helped me. He was real smooth. For him, there was no big things. There was no such thing as a big thing. You just don't use in between meetings. That's it. That's what he told me. He died with, I think, 44 years. You know. And he helped us with a retreat here in Three Rivers. We have a retreat we do every year. If you guys want to go to it, you're more than welcome. But it took that. It took a retreat. Then I couldn't. What am I going to do the rest of the year? I spent 3 days there. What am I going to do? You know. So tell me, why don't you start some meetings? I'll help you start meetings. And so they offered me a position up here in Visalia, California, as a director to a program. I said, whoa, I'm going to run a program. I'm going to be this, and I'm going to be that. And you know what I mean? I'm going to be a big shot in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to be a director. I'm going to be Mr. N.A. You're going to have to call me Mr. Wear a suit, briefcase. Where are you? You see? Why? Because I never had anything like that. You see, it goes through your head. At least to my head. I don't know about you guys. Anyway, so I came up here and met Bob. Because I was looking for a men's stag. Because I did nothing but men's stags over there. I do one over there in Monterey Park. I've been doing it for about 25 years that I go to. And I used to live in Laguna Beach before I did another men's stag over there. I love men's stag because you can get honest here. There's people in this room that will keep me honest. They'll call me on my shit. And I need that stuff. I don't need that pobrecito mijo. I don't need none of that. You callitas. You fell over an outfit. I'm just going to say it in English too. Don't worry about it, brother. I'm bilingual. I'm trilingual. I'm going to give it to you. Watch, I'm trilingual. I know Spanish, and I know English, and I know bullshit. I'll give it to you in bullshit, too. I've been here for a little while. You know, I know all the little tricks, all the little games, you know, that we run in Narcotics Anonymous. Once you've been here a while, you get away with stuff here. You think nobody knows? Somebody knows. There's no secrets in any. You might try and hide for a while, but it'll come out. Usually through anger. Yeah. So let me get back to my story. Anyway, I came over here to Visalia, and I really thought I had it going on. They didn't have a book study, they didn't have a step study, and a men's stag only had 3 people in it. I said, man, what kind of shit is that over here, man? A bunch of farmers over here, you know. Bunch of pinchy norteños, you know. Right away, right, see how we fall? right away. And it might affect somebody in here. But that's the way I really think. Okay? And you got to get better. What's wrong with that, Oki? Who do you think he is anyway? See? That's the addict thinking. It doesn't stop just because you got clean. So for me, I have to work the first step. I have to admit it. See? And the first step, once you admit something, it don't matter. If you admit that you have a problem, you're no longer in the problem. You're in the solution. Whoa, where'd that come from, Michael? I learned that. I earned that. See? But you have to. You have to come to friends to Jimmy K and tell on yourself. Because we understand here. See, I came to Narcotics Anonymous and I wanted everybody to understand me. I did a lot of time, you know. My family dealt all over Orange County, you know. But what I found out, it's better to understand than to be than have people understand you. See, that's the recovery part of it for me. Anyway, so I came over here and I met Pancho. It was brand new. Mato loco. One of the dudes, man. Yeah. See? I identified with his madness right away. They say if you spot it, you got it around here. See, if you dislike a person, you must see some part of you in there. Whoa. Let me stop there because it's on my mind and it's bugging me. I have 4 sons. I have 4 sons. I got 2 boys that are twins. And I got Anthony and I got John. Most of you met John and Anthony. And I got another boy that's been out about 4 years. His name is Vincent. He's been clean for 4 years. I just got my other one. He just got out doing 8 years.
What's his name?
Michael. He knows. And Michael's just like me. He got the same face, got the same habits. You know, he's stuck on the side of his neck right now. You know how boys are. Think they're tough. Yeah. I was telling a friend of mine a little while ago that here, you got to get humble before you crumble. That's simple. Anyway, let me get back to the story. I had to get that out. And they're supposed to be here today. And none of them showed up. The only one that showed up was Alex. I live over there in Bakersfield. And all my friends said they were going to show up. They all raised their hand yesterday. Oh, no, Michael, I'll be there. I said, I'll tell you what. I'll take it this far. Anybody from Bakersfield shows up, I'll buy their breakfast. I do things like that. There's nobody here from Bakersfield. I live over there. I live in that area, Kern County. And they always tell me, oh, yeah, Michael, this, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Did they show up? Hell no. Okay, I got that out of the way. I got that, but my son's out of the way. The main thing is that the people that are here, I want to thank you for coming. You know, because it's really important to me to see a couple faces that I know. There's a lot of people here that I don't know, but I will get to know them before we leave, you know. Hopefully you come to Friends of Jimmy K and share what we got here. We share recovery together, and we try and help each other. But we can't help anybody that don't know how to receive help. You've got to get vulnerable here. Me saying that, let me finish my story. My story is pretty long. Recovery got real hard for me there for a little while because my wife got sick. Your wife gets sick. You know, we've been together about 23 years. My first wife died from cancer, and she's got cancer, geez. And other things, and a whole bunch of stuff. But anyway, she got sick, and it blew me away. Because I'm a guy that don't like hospitals. I don't like the smell. I like to see people when they're hurting. If you're like us old-timers that's been around for a little while, don't like to go to the doctor either. That's Pancho. Don't go until you're broken. Until you wore it out. I'm talking about me, not really Pancho. You know, I identify with Pancho's madness. You know, we don't go there. It doesn't hurt as much. Muchas gracias. Yeah, that's a real sponsor. Bought me water. Bobby saying, I hope he chokes on it. Yeah, see, if you get a sponsor like that, you'll be okay. But anyway, my story is kind of long. I keep saying that because I'm trying to shorten it and still give you what we call the gospel truth. Tell you the truth that I have today that I can see that it might help somebody else. Because I was told if you share the truth from the podium, somebody might hear it. If you're just trying to sound good up here, you might never get nobody. If you're up here to look good, it doesn't work for me. I tried it before. I used to look good up here. I don't look good up here anymore. I went to college a little bit, so I can put a couple sentences together. Yeah. Anyway, then after I lost my job here, they fired me as a director. I went to work for the prison system. Okay. After doing so much time, I figured I'd go help those poor guys in prison and carry the message and force them to get it. We really think that when I forgot to tell you that I was an H&I person. I still am. I like to do H&I. I like to go into prisons. That's how I learned how to go into prisons. I went to San Quentin with a friend of mine called Whitey, and to do an annual, and he took me over there so we could be together in prison. But coming in prison and coming out, we were in prison together there in the 60s. So when I did an H&I up there, and that was a trip. And I went to Folsom, did H&I. Okay, the reason I'm telling you this so you can get the story together. I started working here in Pleasant Valley, my first job, and I wanted to run things. So I was the director. You know, once you're a director, you want to call shots. You know, you want to tell people how to do it, when to do it. You didn't work there. He said, no, you don't run nothing here. You just do what you're told here. So I had to learn. You learn by doing. And then from there, you know, I helped with two programs there in both yards where they had what we call the SAP program. And I got good at it. So they sent me to Jamestown. I don't know if anybody here has been to Jamestown. And from there, I helped to develop the program for the guys that go fight the fires. Those guys used to hate me, man. Yeah. And when they come from the fires, I'd get them. They come in dirty, you know. They used to hate me. Because they had to sit down like you guys are sitting down now and listen to me. Okay? And it worked pretty good. After they got it, they used to love to come to the meetings. Because they figured there's somebody that understands where they come from. You see, they had 100 people in that camp. And it was a good program. Anyway, and I worked on all the other ones, you know. I moved to Wasco because they gave me a job there, you know. So I stayed there in Wasco for a while, for about 8 years. I'm still living in the city. But that's why I moved around so much, for the jobs, you know. I'd go for any place where they'd pay me a little more. Yeah. Anyway, so that's my work was developing programs. Okay. Now, what I do, I check programs. I monitor programs. That's what I do maybe five days a month. They pay me pretty good, you know. I go all over from San Francisco to San Diego, and I go check programs, give a report. They used to call it monitoring programs. They don't call it no more like that. They call it site visits. You see me show up at your program? Something's going on. Anyway, so that's what I did for a living, and I still do it. Going by that, you know, my recovery started going bad when my wife got sick. I was doing a retreat, and they called me from the hospital that she was real sick. So I left the retreat, even left my shoes. Finally, I had to take my shoes home. But I left the retreat. You know, and that's what happens to you. Something pulls you out of your program. It's either sickness, somebody dies, something happens to your family, you know. But I always come back, and I always bring whatever's going on with me at that time. Today I'm pretty good. You know, my wife got out of the hospital Thursday, took her to a meeting yesterday. So she's doing pretty good. So you guys that worry about that stuff, because a lot of people know my wife. So today, I was a little nervous when I first came in, because I said, man, these people don't want to listen. They're tired of you yelling at them, because usually in Friends of Jimmy K, usually I'm yelling at somebody. Somebody did something they're not supposed to. And I monitor meetings. Yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah, and it's usually Pancho. But anyway, how much more do I have? Oh, not too much. Tú sabes. How many?
10:00. I got till 10:30.
Yeah. Till 10:30? I got another half hour? Oh, boy. Now I'm going to lie for sure. Okay. Let's get to the good part. You know, our meditation today, I believe in the meditation. Yeah, I do it every day. Once in a while, I slip and don't do it until I get to the book. Something's going on, you know. But I'll give you this. I know that I'm supposed to do it anyway, no matter who died, no matter who used, no matter if your dog ran away or somebody ran over him or your parakeet flew away. It doesn't matter. You still got to do the program for yourself to stay clean. Because if I don't stay clean, I can't do nothing for nobody. See, if you learn that in the beginning, that you can't do nothing for anybody unless you take care of yourself first. I think it's the first tradition that we do that. Every time I read the meditation, and I've been reading it since they started giving us our book just for today, I get something different out of it. Every year. If you're not getting something different, you're not really reading it. If it's the same old bull, you know, the meeting getting old. If you go to the meeting is, oh man, check it, it's the same stupid son of a gun says the same damn thing every day.
Macho's there
again. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, ain't? Something's wrong. It ain't the meeting. You know, it ain't the meeting. If you hate a meeting, check yourself before you wreck yourself. Anyway, I wanted to give you that because sometimes, you know, I've been doing a meeting in Bakersfield for about 16 years or something like that, 15 years. And now it's developed where we get 100 people in there, from 50 to 100. When I first started, it was only me and Barney, about 5 people. But it built up to where there's 100 people. At lunch, at 12 o'clock, Monday and Friday, I take a lot of my friends there. It's a huge meeting. But half of them are newcomers. But it's working over there. That's one of the meetings that worked out good, and this one here. You know, so I attended almost as much as I can, unless I'm not here, unless I'm in a convention someplace else. Anyway, so today, what I'm working on is that I'm trying to work on my wife, get her to meetings, you know, because she's always hurting. She's feeling a lot of pain. And I don't like to take her when she takes a pain pill, because it changes her mood. She might not realize it. It kills the pain, but it changes the mood. See, I don't take any medication. You know, I try not to take any medication. Right now they got me on a heart medication where they want to slow down my heart. They say it goes too fast. So I've been on it for about 30 days. And it changes my mood. You know, I'm not the same, you know, clean. Anyway, the first step, once you admit that you have a problem, you're no longer in the problem, you're in the solution. Okay, but then you have to continue. The third step is all you have to do is kind of just turn it over. And the second step, all you got to do is give it up. You know, all you got to do is say, I surrender. It's real simple. You don't have to do all that other work until you start hurting. Because if you get enough pain, you'll do something about it. And I don't care how much time you got. You go through the pain all the time. In fact, I think the more time you got, the more it hurts. It seems like we get more vulnerable. And the third one, you just learn how to make decisions. Hopefully you don't make any decisions within the first 5 years, they told me. You ask somebody before you make a decision. You know, I always used to say, like when I go to H&I in the beginning, I learned a little spiel that I like to give to the people that are locked up, you know, or people that are hurting. That you're going to mind somebody sometime, even if they have to put a gun tower in your cell. Because I was in places where. You're always under the gun. You're going to mind somebody sometime. Or you get yourself a program. Okay. And the way we do it through steps. That's why I mentioned all three of them. The fourth is you got to learn how to write. You know, I couldn't do the fourth step because I was afraid somebody would read it. I was so scared of that. Then Gordon told me that everything's on record anyway. You got 115s, 128s, or you got a probation officer that always marked it. When you went to school, they marked your grades and your behavior. See, but you don't realize that when you have to write something down of what you did and what was going on and how you felt about it. See, so if you were ever in probation or drunk driving, because I'm the one that used to write that stuff down for the drunk drivers. Your behavior, I test them. So you're clean. See, but we as addicts don't believe that. So I had a hard time with the fourth step until I learned that. Maybe I knew it before, but I didn't want to realize it. So once I start writing things down, I learned that if it ain't written, it didn't happen. Because you can think of it all day. You can think of step one, step two, step three. But if you don't write it down, okay. What I learned from that is repetition means retention. The more I do it, the more I can retain it. Sometimes I got to go over it 10 times. But that's how I learn how to pass tests, too. I just keep doing them until I pass it. See? And I learned that in Narcotics Anonymous, that it's okay to make mistakes as long as you correct them. They don't come back and haunt you. See? Maybe you guys can't hear that, you know, yet. But I guarantee Narcotics Anonymous is the only place in the world I ever went where it's okay to make a mistake. And we can prove it like this. When one of you relapse or something, something happens to you and you fall over an outfit, or you happen to smoke a joint, you know, you were passing by there and somebody gave you one and you went, oops, I messed up. I relapsed. Okay? Or you're passing through a bar and you hear that song. And it draws you in. See, it still draws me in, the song. Yeah. Especially this country song. Okay. We clap when you come back. Oh, he's back. Alex came back. Oh, yeah, he didn't die. Give him a hug. We'll love you until you love yourself. It's the only place. Try to go to church and say, I relapsed last night. Or go tell the judge. It was an accident. I didn't mean to get loaded. See what happens. You go get loaded and you come back, we'll hug you. It's the only place where we do that. If you find another place, let me know and I'll go. But this is the only place I ever found where it's okay to make a mistake as long as you're correct. Anyway, that's one thing that I learned here. And I didn't want to accept it for a long time, you know. I said, why do they hug that son of a gun? He's a chronic relapser. He goes out once a month. He's just an attention seeker. That's what I used to think of you. If you kept going out, then I got a sponsee like that. The guy up there sent me a sponsee so I could learn. And I take him to a meeting and see a blonde, he was on her. Blonde with big tits. He was on it. So they go out and use together and they come back. And I get mad at him, man. I want to kill him. You're making me look bad. Don't you know I'm your sponsor? Yeah. Make me look bad. But that's how we learn through here. Through doing. If you got problems, get you a couple sponsees and they'll help you with them. They'll make you work the steps. I don't know if anybody sponsored anybody, but I suggest that Joe should sponsor somebody so he can learn a little bit. He's our new secretary. We just got him. He's in training. He's got little training wheels. And he gets real embarrassed. Why do I know that? Because I identify with him. See, people used to pull me out in groups like that. He said, oh, Michael just got here. Let me use my name. You know, stuff like that. But in Narcotics Anonymous, we learn how to cope with things. You got to learn or allow yourself enough room to learn something. Every time that you come to a meeting, Gordon used to tell me this. Try and get something. Try and hug somebody you don't know. Talk to a newcomer. Try and help somebody. See if they allow you to help them. Because a lot of people don't want no help. They say they do. Try and help them. See what happens. Try and force yourself on them. Oh, let me help you. See what happens. Even people that have been here a long time don't accept help. They say, yeah, leave me alone. You guys that got time, I saw some people that got time. You might identify with this, is that you still don't allow people to help you. Certain areas, it's okay. Maybe if you trust them. Open up in a group like this or a Friends of Jimmy K and tell the truth. What happened to you last night? Did you get some or didn't you? Did you say no? That hurts a lot of men. Sorry. You go there and it wouldn't, for some reason, stand straight. That's hard to say. When my sponsor, Gordon, said it in the main stag, in the retreat, he said that his thing wouldn't get hard anymore, man. He dropped tears. I dropped a tear with him. I didn't want nobody to see me, so I had to put it back. I don't know if you guys do that. You know, when somebody starts crying, you feel like crying, you go, I can't cry. I can't allow nobody to see me cry in this meeting. I can't get emotional. But when he did it, it made it okay for me. And he told the truth. He said he was having problems, man. And he put it out there. The best words he had, he didn't try to make it sound pretty or nothing. Just the truth. You know, that was a while back. And ever since then, man, I said, man, how could he do that? How could he tell people that his pee-pee wouldn't get hard? Sounds funny, huh? I say it just so you guys can smile, you know, because I don't want you... As soon as I start getting serious, I like to make you laugh. We believe that laughter cures whatever ails you. You know, if you can laugh at yourself. Okay. Man, this is getting long. I got 15 more minutes. And the fifth step, to be able to tell another human being all your wrongs, the nature of your wrongs. The first time I did it, I had to do it with a priest, because that's the way I was taught as a child. Confession. And the priest was a recovering priest, and he told me, I'm not a priest right now. I'm just at a recovering addict just like you. So I read the whole thing to him, you know, like if I'm doing confession, like that. He told me, no, that's not the way Narcotics Anonymous works. Yeah. See, because usually if you get you a sponsor, they identify not so much where you've been, where you were at, or nothing, but how you felt about it. What emotion you were going through. And that's the important part. You know, if you can name an emotion that you're going through, you're probably doing pretty good. If you talk about how you feel about that emotion, you're doing great. That's what I was told. Because it's easy to talk about feelings. Try and attach an emotion to it. Love, hate, any of those. Don't matter. Fear, which is a good one. Talk about your fears. I fear this or I fear that. And be honest. And if you tell another person that, guess what? You're really telling yourself. Or you're opening yourself up. That's what we call open-mindedness. At least that's what I believe. Once you do all that, listen to this. Then you get to the sixth step and the seventh, because they told me to put them together. You know, and when I asked my first sponsor about character defects, listen to this one. I used to ask him every day, man, what's a character defect? You know what? I can't tell you. Read it. Read for it. Look it up. Do all the work. Write it down, and then we'll discuss it. Finally there, when I did all the stuff that he asked me to do, he told me, hey, Michael, don't worry about character defects. Just remember this. If it wouldn't be for character defects, you wouldn't have a character at all. Eat that one a little bit. Work it around your head a little bit. man, I wanted to kill him. I said, what? All that work that I did, and I wanted an answer from him. My sponsor would never give me an answer, man. He made me work for it. And he'd always answer with something in NA that usually we say in meetings. You know. So, once I did that, I had trouble writing things down on the A step, you know, that I had to make amends to. I didn't want to make amends to Pancho. He had it that coming. I did that to him because, you know, he shouldn't have looked at me funny. He's looking at me funny. That's why I did that. See? Justifying. But once you put these down, and my sponsor told me, don't worry about it, man. You put it down. You're not making amends to them. You're just trying to get it together who you hurt in the process of you using in the beginning. Who'd you hurt first? Mom. See? That's a hard one to write down. How you hurt your mom. What you did to your mom. All those times that she cried for you. She prayed for you. That was hard for me. I don't know about anybody else here. I had trouble with it. It's easy to talk about Pancho or Alex or you guys. Easy. Talk about your children. I don't know about you guys, but I used to lock myself up in the bathroom because I couldn't find a vein and make the kids go outside and pee. I forgot to tell you, I kind of used heroin now and then. So I locked the door, and they'd be banging it, trying to get in. I'd send them outside to pee. Not only the kids, everybody else, too, because I couldn't find a vein, and I was mad. Don't you think that hurt people? Okay. So those are my main issues. I figure I did so much time in the penitentiary that I had paid my due to society. I really did. I figured, you know, did time. It had me on parole for a long time. I paid my debt to society. I should be a good citizen now. I'm off parole. Took me, what, 30 years to get off parole. Yeah. I figured, don't you think that makes me a good citizen? The sponsor said, no. You got to do something for somebody else. Anyway, so I had trouble with the 8-step. The 9-step, I figured it would be easy. I'll give you this one thing that I did in the 9-step that I still regret today. Because I didn't ask my sponsor, like you're supposed to. You're supposed to ask him, hey, can I do this, you know, before making a decision. I went in to my ex-wife's house and told her that I'd like to talk to her, and I brought her in the kitchen. And we sat down, had a cup of coffee, and I made amends. Made amends for this, made amends for that. You know, I figured, well, you know, I should say, I'm sorry, you know. That's all I knew. I'm sorry. And then when I finished, she threw me out of the house. She said, I liked you better when you were using. You're a better person when you were using. Okay? That's how smart I was in the beginning. See, but if you use those as learning tools, like I was told, it helps you. For somebody else, when they're going through that stuff and you're sponsoring somebody, you can give them what you learned. Okay? If I sponsor you, I'm going to give you some stuff that I learned from, that I got from my sponsor. Anyway, when I went and told my sponsor what I did, right? He said, you kept telling her you were sorry. She knows you're a sorry son of a gun. You didn't have to tell her you were sorry. Everybody knows you're a sorry. Look at you. You're a sorry son of a gun. He knew how to how to love me until I learn how to love myself there a little bit. You see what I mean? So every time you say you're sorry, guess what's going on with you? That's what she told me. Try not to use that anymore with people. Now, if you got a business, you got to tell everybody you're sorry. But I'm talking about your family, especially your kids. Anyway, so I gave you a little bit of my life, man, and how I've done it these years. You know, I'm coming up on 27 on the 3rd of November, and usually I go to where's the capital here? Sacramento or over there. And I go do that stage convention. They have it always on my birthday.
Reno.
And I go over there and I celebrate my birthday right there with a whole bunch of people that I know. And I went to the first convention there in Reno when they had it in a little gambling situation right there. They had it right there. We had it in the back, a little convention. Now they have the Grand Hotel, the whole bottom Grand Hotel. It's huge. So if you guys want to go, I'll see you there. That's where I take my cake, you know, right on my birthday on the 3rd. They always have it on the 3rd. I don't know why. Yeah, and it always falls right into in a weekend too, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Yeah. I don't know what else to tell you guys. Just that I'm here. You know, if I can help you with anything, or you're going through that stuff, if you can't ask me, ask somebody that's nicer than I am, because I'm not that much of a nice guy. You know. If you tell me something, I'm going to tell you what I learned. And sometimes it don't fit you. A lot of things that I stayed clean with, you might not be able to. You might get loaded over it. You see? I had a lot of death in my family, man. A lot of death in my family. My sister overdosed. One of my sisters overdosed. And my brother overdosed. Now that I told you that, I'm going to tell you that my boy has 22 years. My sister has 24 years clean. I have 14 people in my immediate family that are clean. So, we believe this is a family disease. We believe it's a disease. It's not a moral dilemma. Like some churches tell you, this is a moral dilemma. We know it's a disease, and it can be arrested at some point. It says, why are we here? When I first read that or heard it in a meeting, and they said, it can be arrested at some time. I thought that my parole officer was coming through the door, because I didn't know any better. But this disease can be arrested. Can you ever get rid of it? Not that I know of. It's always right in here. You know, I'll leave you with this. I like to leave you with something that it took me a while to learn. And I didn't believe it when I first heard it. You know, I thought it was bullshit. You know, I thought the guy just trying to sound intelligent or make it sound good. He said it like this. Hopefully I can say it the way he said it was. I stole it from that addiction that we believe addiction is, you know, what the word addiction means to us is it's an obsession of the mind that gives you a physical compulsion that we believe it kills the human spirit. And the reason we say that is because we do things against our will and the will of other people, and we harm people. But most of all, we harmed ourselves. You know? And I didn't believe it, so I had to look it up. Every words in there are in our book. Okay, we got a lot of books today. I'm reading the spiritual book that we have, the last one that got written. And I'm having trouble with it. You know, I don't want to accept it. I want to go by the old book, by the our first book, or the white book. I would like to go back to the white book because it was simple. That's the first one I got, was a little book like that. Now they got books for days. And they're writing another one. Those darn addicts. Those educated addicts. Okay? They're putting it down in paper so you can read it. And if you don't know how to read, they told me, we have tapes, or now discs, where you can get our books. Now, even on the phone, you can get everything we got in Narcotics Anonymous. But anyway, I think I'm writing a button. Am I right on the money, Joe? And you guys treat Joe real nice so we can keep him. You guys love him and all that stuff. I can't do it. I can't love him. Look at him. But anyway, my name is Michael and I'm an addict. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for showing up today. I am so grateful that my friends showed up, you know, at least a couple of them. The other ones, I might not talk to for a whole month. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to.